In 2020, I moved to AAA as a chief commercial officer. And that's where I started my journey in radio pharmaceutical. And I have to say that I've been intrigued from day one on how this platform potential can really be in the near future and all the opportunity that can come by treating cancer in a different way.
Hello and welcome. My name is Chel Spence, host of A Dose of Reality, where we discuss some of the hardest parts of our clinical leadership and how to build a meaningful career. Join me as I interview leaders, share career insights, and help you on your journey to becoming a global clinical leader. In this episode, you're going to hear me speaking with the very charming, very talented Riccardo Canevari. He was the chief commercial officer for AAA when they were going through their huge and successful launches of Lutathera and Pluvicto. He then moved on to become a CEO of a small biotech venture, and he shares with me his insights of what it was like growing up over in Italy to then building his career and then as a CCO and then as a CEO. One thing that stood out completely from Riccardo, which was very nice to experience this, is he is clearly a people person and loves people. And when I asked him what's his biggest career mistake, he says, holding on to people too long when perhaps their performance is not quite right. And look, we've all been there, especially if you are a people person. So enjoy, go on the journey with us, and let's get on with it. There he is. How are you, Riccardo?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Charles.
It's good to be speaking with you again, my friend. Well, look, appreciate your time on this. Riccardo, you're in the US now, but where did you grow up?
Yeah, maybe you will understand soon from my accent. I'm from Italy, where I was born and grown up and did my studies, and I studied my professional career. Yeah, I'm from Milan, so north of Italy, and that's where I'm from.
Very good. What was like growing up there? What was your childhood like?
That was great, you know. I mean, it was easy, I would say. It was a lot of friends. I was lucky enough to grow up in a family that was really taking care of me and my brother and helped us to go through, you know, school and to be decent students, not the best, but decent student, but a lot of family support. And for me, this is very important. And now that it's my turn, I'm trying to do the same with my kid.
Oh, very good. So then you've already highlighted good student, not the best, but a good student. How would you say other people describe you, Riccardo?
Oh, I was, I was always surrounding by friends. I really like to spend my free time with multiple friends. At school, you know, was cool, but was a playground as well. It was an opportunity to spend time with others, and you know, either school or sports for me was the possibility to stay together and grown up together and do activities together. So I'm really a people person. I need to be surrounded by people, and it's the same in my professional career. I like to be a team member, and I like to have people around me where we can, you know, share opinion, a very frequently different opinion and different point of view, but to have an exchange of idea. Some fights when you are a student or when you are an adult in different ways, but if fights are with positive attitude and not confrontational, are fights for good ideas, they are always welcome.
Yeah, very good. How did that then shape and influence your decisions to get into the industry? Why did you go into pharma? Why did you join, said it in our little pre-chat, Rotterdam all the way in 1996?
Yeah, so I studied chemistry and pharmacy, but since the beginning, my idea was to be in the commercial part of the business, not in the in the lab or pure R&D. Unfortunately, when I was still young, I lost my father for cancer. And, you know, this is something that stays with you forever. It really influences you because it's a big loss when you're a kid and you miss advice, suggestion, you miss the leadership from somebody that is really close to you, and you need to find and close that the loop by yourself. So that's another reason why pharma, discovering of new medicine in tough to treat diseases, or in oncology in particular, is very close to what I like to do.
How long have you been working in oncology now?
So I did different times, you know. While you are in my career in Novartis, I did many things from specialty pharma to oncology, back to specialty pharma, and then oncology again. So if I put together, it's probably 10, 12 years that is oncology only. And I really like the space. There is so much innovation. And it's great to see, you know, multiple company, academics, university, everybody trying to go for this common goal, when one day we can say, well, you know, we have cured cancer, or at least some type of cancer, and we are making very good progresses with the others. It's so amazing.
Fantastic. So you've entered Rotterdam Farm. We're going to skip some of the steps. Went to head of business unit, now all the way to a CEO leading a small firm. Question I always like to ask, you could have just stayed as a sales manager. You could have stayed as a product specialist if you really wanted to. Why didn't you?
Look, sales manager is probably the best job that you can have. I mean, it's really fun. I mean, you spend time outside with all your sales rep. You are so close to the customer. You visit customer in different places, and you really create a team spirit of winning together. I don't think there is a better job than being a sales manager. But, you know, then you want to keep growing, and then you do marketing and sales, but then in the company they tell you, okay, what about strategy? What about taking responsibility outside your comfort zone? And for me, this is the big lesson. When you learn something, you can really enjoy doing that because that's your comfort zone, but you know that you can stretch yourself also if you go out of it. And so, for example, for me, there was an opportunity to take a role of a general manager. That means leading a cross-functional team, not only sales. No, you need to lead medical, legal, communication. You need to lead people that knows more than you. And that opportunity also was in a different country. So not in Italy, but abroad. So when you put it together, was an opportunity of stretching yourself, and it's a great opportunity to grow. So yeah, out of the comfort zone is what matters.
What was this, and it's completely different skill set. It's not just the sales ability that you need to continue building, but it's having that big picture ability, and also having the political ability. I mean, I put my hand up. I mean, I was terrible at politics in my previous firm, which is why I wanted to work for myself. How naturally or unnaturally did that come to you, Ricardo?
Oh, it was not naturally at all. So, you know, as you mentioned, let's take the example of sales manager. You are confident because you have done that job before. So you know when you speak with your team, you know what they think. You know how is the work, what are the obstacles, what are the challenges, because you have done it. But when you become a leader of a cross-functional team, you have no idea what are the challenges of a head of medical, no idea what are the challenges of a head of legal. And so you need to rely on your ability to understand people more than the content, and try to understand, is these people really committed? Is telling me both the good news, but also the bad news. Are we really working together as a team? Because from a technical point of view, you have no clue. So that's difficult. The other one, politics. Yeah, politics, look, it matters. It matters like, in particular, in large organization and mid-sized organization, less in small one. But it matters. I mean, we can see also politics like a sort of communication. Now, when you are younger, you think that all it matters are the hard facts. What number you deliver, by when, and that's it. And then when you realize that in reality, what matters are the stories, how you tell things are going, how you describe the situation, because people tend to forget what happened the previous quarter and the previous quarter, but people remember the narrative. So the ability to create a good story, a good communication around what you do and what you want to deliver is a sort of politics, if you want, but it's important.
That is a really interesting point. And you're absolutely right. You're always going to have bad news and you're always going to have to deliver things to people that they're probably not going to like. So how you spin it, how you present it. Well, look, on stories, you then were part of one of the biggest radio pharma firms in terms of both success in its clinical trials, success in its drug launch, and then eventual exit. What was that like? Just walk me through it. When did you get officially involved with some of the radiotherapy products at AAA/Novartis?
Yeah, so I was in Novartis for majority of my career, and I moved to US in 2017. That was another example of, you know, getting out of your comfort zone, because I was doing the general manager for a combined 7 years. And then they told me, well, you know, fun is over. You need to go to the headquarters. Okay. So the headquarters was two headquarters in Novartis, one in Basel for specialty pharma and one in US for oncology. And I decided to go to oncology because, as I mentioned before, I really like the space. And also, I was thinking that living and growing in US professionally and personally could have been an important experience. So I moved to US in 2017. I was senior vice president for the breast cancer franchise, and I did the job for 2 years. And then at the time is when Novartis decided to acquire AAA. AAA is this, oh, that was the leader in nuclear medicine and radiopharmaceutical. Novartis acquired AAA and another small company called Endocyte to have access to their pipeline and portfolio. And so in 2020, I moved to AAA as the chief commercial officer. And that's where I started my journey in radiopharmaceutical. And I have to say that I've been intrigued from day one on, you know, how this platform potential can really be in the near future and all the opportunity that can come by treating cancer in a different way. So, you know, it was great, the opportunity to go back to your time when I was studying physics to try to remember the isotope and the decay and the half-time and all the property of chemical linker and so on, because, you know, you need to understand the basics. You don't need to be the expert in science, but you need to understand the basics. And then, of course, all the oncology aspect of how these products can help to treat cancer diseases, in particular in solid tumors.
When you took over that portfolio, did you already have an idea of how successful it was going to be?
No. You know, when you start a job, you always try to learn a bit, try to study a little bit before, if it's a good opportunity or not. But the reality that whatever homework you do, the results is always difficult when you get there. There is something that you can learn only firsthand and when you start leaving the new job on a daily basis. And I was going with good faith that this could have been an interesting area, but I was not expecting it so interesting and so with high potential. So that was a positive surprise.
So when you've got that, so you've got Luther and Pluvicto, and these guys are producing fantastic results. People are getting excited about it. But from my understanding, and it's certainly not going to be as deep as yours, Ricardo, so I'm hoping you fill in the blanks here. From my understanding, there's always been a bit of a challenge with getting radiotherapy commercialized. If we look at Bayer's Xofigo, that was stopped through commercial reasons. We had GSK's Bexxar, which was stopped as well for the commercial viability of it. How do you deal with that? You're in charge of making it as commercially viable as possible. You've got fantastic results, but you see these challenges, potential roadblocks ahead of you. How does someone navigate that?
So at the beginning, Lutathera was available, was available in US and in multiple different countries around the world, already received FDA approval. So the objective was really to accelerate the growth and to be sure that you can maximize the opportunity, that you can reach more and more patients that can benefit from the products, and also that all the complex logistic of a radiopharmaceutical is in place. Was a great opportunity to learn, because Lutathera is somehow in a small indication. The neuroendocrine tumors are affecting a limited population. So it was a great learning also because the size was quite small. But when we were preparing the launch of Pluvicto, was a completely different perspective, because prostate cancer can be 5 to 10 times bigger than neuroendocrine tumor. So the ability to scale up your presence, the global launch, the infrastructure was a critical element of the launch preparation. It was not only the typical, marketing and sales preparation, but there were all the elements of preparing the market. The physician, the oncologist that work in prostate cancer were not used to potentially such an effective products. They had to deal with Xofigo that was just for a limited indication, not for the broader population with metastatic prostate cancer. So it was a completely new wave of preparing the patient. The patient need to arrive at the hospital at a certain time because the molecule with the isotope need to arrive at a certain time. It takes time to dose the patient. You cannot do multiple patients at the same time unless you have multiple facilities. So the logistic part was very important. And I think the industry is learning from this experience. Now there are more and more products that are in late stage development. And so clinical trials are happening. And the market is getting ready for broader and broader utilization of radiopharmaceutical therapy, and I think it's great.
And so we've a successful launch. You've learned that you have to be on all stakeholders and getting that strategy right. And now you've decided to move completely different to a much smaller organization and take over everything. So what has been some of the lessons you've been able to bring to RAD? And what has been a completely new skill set that you've also had to build in your new journey?
Yeah, that was, of course, is a big move. You go from a company of 110,000 employees and you start a company with 3 people. So that's, of course, is different. Completely different approach, and nobody's prepared with it until you do it. You just need to have faith that you can learn on the go. and you can fix the plane while flying. And you, because you don't have time to sit down and stop and fix and restart. So I think you put together all your learnings in the previous role. But I think what matters is more the attitude. You need to trust people because you are in 3 people. Now we are like 12. So it seems a lot, but still we are a small team and everybody is so important. You cannot afford a situation where one person is not performing, because one person is the equivalent of entire department in a larger company. So everybody is so critical. You need to really trust what they do, because they are expert in their area. And you need to go back and learn from scratch something that you have never done. As I mentioned before, I've always been a commercial guy. And here, a lot of us to do with understanding preclinical, regulatory strategy, phase 1 clinical design. So it helps to continue the journey of your continuous learning. But it's a great experience. I don't regret one single day of the decision that I took. Even if, look, the reality, it is tough. And I think it's normal. It is supposed to be hard what we do. I mean, otherwise cancer will be gone already. There are so many smart people working on it. And if you think you arrive here and in 2 years or 3 years you change everything in terms of environment, what's going on, etc., that's not possible. It's supposed to be hard, and it's hard. But it's also a question of good small step that are compounding each other. And so when you have the small step and another small step and so on, and then at a certain point, you can really see the difference. Sometimes we always tend to look at the few extremely successful examples of people or company that, you know, in 3 years do something amazing. And that's great, but that's not the reality. The reality is that the other 99.9% of people or companies that continue to work, continue to improve, they do 2 steps in the right direction, but also 1 step back, and then they restart. And probably after a number of years, they create something of value. It's not a business that can happen in a few months. And the biggest risk that we face, in particular in a small company like Radiopharmtheranostics or in many others similar, that we want too much, too soon, too fast. And this is not going to happen. So you need to be ambitious. You need to stretch yourself. You need to stretch the team. But that's not easy. And it's supposed to be hard.
I absolutely. And I've got 2 follow-up questions for you. The hiring strategy, going from 110,000 people to now you're 3, what did you have to relearn in terms of how you approach people, how you select people? Because if you get one person wrong, that's 25%, right? That's the same as Novartis. That's like hiring 25,000 incorrect people. So let's just do 1 question at a time. Yeah. What did you have to relearn? What did you have to rethink when it came to having the right people around you, Ricardo?
Look, people is always the most difficult aspect. And you can try to, you know, to look at the CV. You try to look at people that know that person, references. You can use, of course, professional in the space that can give you a good background of previous success, or also how the person is as an individual, not only as a professional. But then you never know how the person will fit in the new environment. So there is always a dose of luck in this one. But, you know, you try to put all the elements together, desires, no, that can come from references, previous experience, ability to perform, ability to be a team member, of course, experience in the field and in the sector. And then you always have an element of gamble of how the person will fit in the new team. And you know, you need to be realistic. When you are in Novartis, you go out and say, do you like to join my team in Novartis? And well, at least 9 out of 10 have at least interested to speak and to understand more. When you say, I am in radiopharm theranostics, they say, sorry, you are with who? So it's different. People don't join the company because it has no legacy, has no brand equity. The people join because they have a personal motivation to do something important in an environment where they are always exposed. There is no place to hide. There is something to deliver, and you need to do 3 jobs at the same time, despite this is not in your job description, because this is how it works. So attitude is probably one of the most important elements beyond the technical skill and being the subject matter expert.
So how, you're right, because people, if they compare your company to Novartis, on the surface level, it's an easy decision, right? You just go for what you know. Yet still people every day join weird and wonderful biotechs. And the important thing here, at least when I work with my clients and my candidates, is why are they joining it? What's the mission behind what you're trying to achieve? Have you seen, now that you've worked for a smaller firm, have you seen it more? Have you been able to experience it more, that being part of a mission? And is that something you see when people join, you know, firms such as yours?
I fully agree with you. I think this is critical. And I see this. I see this aspect of being interested in what the company does from a scientific point of view. To understand, can this company really give a strong contribution to what is happening in the field? Can I be part of this story? We are focusing now on 3 priorities: pancreatic cancer, non-small cell lung cancer, brain metastasis. These are all terrible diseases where there are limited therapeutic solution. And so every incremental benefit that you can bring to those patients makes a huge difference. So people are driven by personal motivation. You know, unfortunately, cancer is everywhere, and it's difficult that you meet somebody that has no experience in the family or in the friends or in somebody very close. So you always have personal story that are driving you. And this mission is what your company narrative, and what can really attract talented people to join your small team.
Absolutely. And that's what drives you crazy when either I hear other recruiters or even other leaders in companies, and now it doesn't happen so often at the CEO or the founder level, but usually the layer under, where they sometimes struggle with selling the mission. And if you can't get the mission of a company right, especially in economic climates like this, then, you know, why the hell would anyone leave their company or join your company over a big fight, if they're good, right? You know, if they don't have much options ahead of them, then fair enough. But if you want the good ones, it's really about getting that mission right. Do you work with recruiters? You must have worked with the recruiters throughout your career.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, either in my previous company or in the current situation, we do. In every sector, there are people and company addressing the area with different approaches. You know, somebody believe in some that some elements are more important. Somebody else believes in something else. So just because it's the same sector doesn't mean that they are all the same. And I see a lot of differences in people understanding the company challenges first and try to find the right person instead of, you know, this unsolicited approach where somebody is telling you, I have a fantastic CMO with 10 years here, 5 years there, without even know what is our company about. That person, I'm sure, is an amazing person, is an amazing professional. But nobody can fit equally well in 10 different companies that have 10 different cultures and 10 different approaches. So I appreciate when there is a time invested to understand what we do, why we do, what is our team culture, and then having the right person to join and to give a strong contribution.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the culture is what you're going to be building. Something I look for when I'm interviewing people is, I don't know about you, Ricardo, but I love when people explain their mistakes and where they've failed and then what they've learned from it. So I'm going to flip the question to you here, because you've mentioned that in the questions I gave to you was about learning. What's been some of the mistakes you've reflected on? You've made throughout your career, and how has that made you a better leader and person?
Yeah, look, it's always difficult, you know, when you receive this question. So I was trying to think more than a specific example, because, you know, every example can be right or wrong, also in the context of what was the specific situation, the environment. But I was trying more to reflect if there is a pattern where I kind of do the same mistakes more than once, because I am in that way, or because that's my style, or because it's where I am. And I believe that probably in my earlier, but not earlier, I mean, also recent career, probably I see two patterns. One is you always want to please your manager. No, when you are a younger professional and you have your boss there and other people, you want to be sure that he or she likes you. And because you feel it's so important, without realizing that probably in the following 10 years you change 7 of them. But anyhow, you want to please the person, and this is preventing you to be yourself and to give your real contribution, to challenge his or her thinking in a positive way instead of going with the flow. This, for me, is a mistake, because, you know, professionally, you don't give your best, and personally, you don't build your self-confidence that you can be assertive, that you can say why something might be right or wrong without the feeling that, you know, well, I need to please my manager because in 3 months I have the media review and then in 9 months I have the year-end review. So that's a pattern that I had in the past, and I was going through it and try to improve. It's not easy. You mentioned the word politics before. It depends also on the organization and why, how much this is acceptable, that people don't really follow like the leader, like a member of you know, a group or a troop, but they are all different individuals. That's also one mistake that for me is important. The other one, you know, I mentioned before that I am a people person, and I tend to be a people person also in what I do. So what is the other you know, side of the coin when you are a people person? You are too nice with people. You are too nice with the results that these people deliver, because you always find an excuse. Oh, well, okay, it was a mistake, but it's a good guy. or, well, not, that's not really a big mistake. And then at a certain point, you realize that there is a performance issue. And when you know, for in the best interest of the company and of the person, you decide to separate the professional journey, you realize that you should have done that much earlier. So being sure that being nice and fair with people doesn't mean to accept some average or lower than average result, I think is important.
Amen. I say amen to that, Ricardo. That is the hardest thing. You've got two leaders. It's kind of two on their sides, isn't it? You've got the micromanagers who don't trust anyone and they can't like anyone. And then you've got the other side, which is they just love everyone on their team. But you're right. They allow poor performance, which can creep into to poor culture. Probably the hardest thing you have to deal with as a leader. So, but you know what, Ricardo? I like that you said that, because it shows even if people at your level deal with having to be human and having to make hard decisions on liking someone versus results. I think I'm going to leave it there. I have more questions for you, but I think that's a nice way to leave it. I'm sure our paths will hopefully cross over at some point. Last, final question. If there was anyone, whether it be a Ricardo Jr. About to start his or her career, and they're looking about going into the radiotherapeutic space. Yeah. Is this an area that's going to be around for a long time? Do you see this is going to be a big growth? And should people be excited to build a career in this area?
Look, I think it's important to see radiopharmaceutical as a new pillar in oncology, not as a standalone sector that is the evolution of nuclear medicine. What I mean is there is this approach to treat a patient with oncological disease that has been through decades of using different tools. You know, first of all, surgery, you want to be sure that you remove the tumor as soon as possible. And then there has been chemotherapy that is very effective, but is not distinguishing tumor versus healthy tissue. So it's creating a side effect, but it's there, it's going to be there. And then there has been the period of targeted therapy where you try to have more and more selective molecule. And the field is keep evolving, you know, in the area of immunotherapy, cell and gene therapy. And so what else is needed? Well, I think that what else is needed is exactly radiopharmaceutical therapy that are using the combination of very modern targeted molecules. Because what it matters that you go to the tumors and you don't go to the healthy tissue. And you are able to attach this isotope that is going there and killing the cancer cell. So this approach has been proven, but has been proven only in two therapeutic areas, neuroendocrine tumor and prostate cancer. And there is no reason why radiopharmaceutical therapy can be effective in the great majority of solid tumor. So I see this field like continue to grow for the next 10, 15, and 20 years.
Amazing. That is a fantastic answer. Well, look, Ricardo, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for sharing your career journey and your insights and why this is such a fantastic field. So I'll end it here. Thank you again, Ricardo.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you for listening to this show. Now, if you've enjoyed it, then click subscribe, leave a review, or just let me know it's valuable. You know what? We all have doubts from time to time, and receiving these small pieces of encouragement can have a huge impact. And of course, if you are looking for a career change or you want to be connected with fantastic people in our networks, then please contact me directly either on my email, charles@deserra-search.com, or on my LinkedIn. You can also find access to more material, courses, and any other stuff which can help you on your leadership and your career journey. Thanks again for listening, and have a great rest of the day.